Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 69 of HER, the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, and her life. Oh boy, today we're going to be talking about, kind of going it on your own when it comes to your marriage and putting it all back together again. You know, you may not need that marriage therapist. Sacrilege. Before we jump into this excellent topic, I want you to know that this episode of HER is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They're delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix customized for women. Trust me, you won't forget to take them because they taste so great. To learn more, go to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And just a quick reminder to hop on over to iTunes after our episode and give us a nice rate and review, because guess what? I read these things. Feedback is where it's at. All right, it's time for HER.
HER, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about HER.
Let's see now. You may not need that marriage therapist. When I read this in a recent article, I said, all right, who said this? And I need to know more. So we have the who said this with us. And she wrote a fabulous book. You got to pick this thing up because it's really a great twist on staying in there with that relationship. And it's all about you. The name of the book is It Takes One to Tango, How I Rescued My Marriage with Almost No Help from My Spouse, and How You Can Too. And the author is Winifred Riley. And Winifred Riley is a marriage and family therapist with a private practice in Berkeley. I'm a little biased because UC Berkeley is my alma mater here. So already I like Winifred. And she's been practicing for 35 years and has treated hundreds of couples. That's code for, I think she knows what she's talking about. And she's written all kinds of great blogs for the Huffington Post and the Good Men Project and on and on and on. And she has a relationship advice blog, speaking of marriage. So here we are with this wonderful book and Winifred. Winifred, welcome to the HER podcast.
Pleasure to be here.
Oh my gosh, I've got the book in my hot little hands. And I just love the whole twist on this issue of how you take care of your marriage. You know, I think everyone likes to just go running toward, you know, a therapist or two or three or four, saying, okay, please. And they're externalizing everything out there. And were you shocked to find out that you were able to do it, as it were, on your own?
Well, you know, actually, we had tried couples therapy, and so, and obviously that's what I do for a living. But what I was finding was that my husband was not, it was as if I had good ideas. My husband is a lovely man, and we have a wonderful marriage. But my good ideas, he sort of has his own ideas. And this is what happens for people in their relationship. Somebody has a good idea. And, sometimes it's a good idea, like, I think we drink too much. I want to stop drinking. Or I want to move to the country. Or what do you say, we have another kid? Or, and the other person is not on board. The other person, things are fine as they are. Or I don't think we need to go to therapy. And conventional wisdom pretty much says, well, that's the end of the line there. If your spouse won't join in the effort, there's nothing you can do, because we all know you can't change your spouse. And then people feel disempowered. They feel stuck. And there were things I wanted. I began to study relationships much more in depth than I had learned in graduate school. I began to learn things about how when couples are kind of joined at the hip, when they're, in a three-legged race, I can't say something without you reacting. You can't say something I dislike without us having to talk about it. I can't make a sigh without you getting tangled up in it. People start to feel stuck. And I began to learn that that actually it's these sort of counterintuitive ideas. You have to have a little separation in order to be close. You have to learn how to disagree, and that'll be the end of your argument. Like, these things didn't make sense. And so when I brought them home to my husband, he really actually thought that, you know, I'd been reading something and been brainwashed. So he didn't quite get what I was talking about. What's the whole purpose of a relationship if you're going to be more separate? You know, and so I decided, after trying to get him to sign on to my ideas, I just decided to put some of these things into practice myself. One of the big things we all know, we all say, at least we give lip service, is you can't change your partner. So what that means then is you're only left with the status quo or changing yourself. So I started to observe my own behaviors, and I saw that I had plenty of things to change. So, for example, we could be in some kind of an argument, and I realized that I was as stubborn as he is. Or I realized that I'm as likely to start an argument as he is. Or no argument is too stupid for me to engage in. And I started to look at these things and change how I was responding, and things started to change.
I love it. You know, what you really did was you paused. You hit the pause button, and you said, whoa, wait a minute now. And then you took a deep cleansing breath, and you step back and you said, let me look at me. Because it's too easy to look at the other guy. And, you know, and then you've got the laundry list of what I call BMW, bitch, moan, and whine. You know, it's like they don't do this right and they're idiots and, you know, and it goes on and on.
And all
in your
true
book,
too.
Yeah, I know, seriously. We're never wrong. In your book, chapter 3, it says, don't be afraid to change first. How to become the front runner for change in your marriage. You have a wonderful Kierkegaard quote, which is, to dare is to lose one's footing momentarily. To not dare is to lose oneself. And it's just, you know, it's interesting. I think people are fearful and they're afraid. So you're saying don't be afraid to change first. And at the end of the book, you summarize, at the end of the chapter, you summarize, you can't cajole or wheedle your way into a better marriage. Lord knows we try, but it's not going to work. Most of us want our partner to change so that we don't have to change ourselves. And that's what you were just addressing. And then finally, if you want to have a better marriage, be willing to take the first step. It's courageous to be the front runner for change. I just really like the way that sounds. I really do.
Well,
so you stop the blame game, right?
Yes, you stop the blame game. You also, it's so much more empowering than any other way of looking. I mean, when we can agree on things, when two people can agree on things, it's sort of seamless. You don't actually even notice it. We notice the times where we can't get lined up, and then we think something is wrong, and then we think we have to get lined up, or we have to change that partner. We can't tolerate the tension of our differences very well. We think, we have to always be in agreement, and so people end up kind of bludgeoning their spouse or whining or basically thinking, I can't, I sometimes like to say, I would be really happily married if it wasn't for my husband.
Uh-huh. There's a lot of that going on out there.
There's
you also say...
between me and happiness.
I know, seriously. It's like, let me think about this for a second. So you also say that, couples tend to have the same fights over and over again. And it's usually about stupid stuff, ridiculous things. In your chapter about couples learning to see the big picture, right? The big picture chapter. You say that content is a distraction. It's kind of like, being stuck in the weeds from what's really going on. So what are people really fighting about?
Okay. So on a content level, they're fighting about nothing. They're fighting about where to put the olive oil and whether to turn left and which way is the quickest way to get to the freeway. But what's underneath that are some actually predictable big picture issues that affect all couples. People fight about trust, and it's not necessarily trust like there's been some big betrayal. It could be, you know, you said you were going to unload the dishwasher and you didn't. What am I supposed to do about that? We fight about trust. We fight about commitment. I'm working harder in the relationship. Or, you know, you seem every time we have a fight, you just sort of bail. You know, so that, you know, or so that's trust, there's commitment. We fight about power and control. We fight about our needs.
How about respect?
Respect, yeah. So respect is in there. And but if we go even underneath respect,
yeah,
sometimes if someone's being disrespectful, but see, we don't address the thing. We don't call things by their correct name, which is what I write about in that chapter. Usually, if you're having a fight about respect, you're not saying what it is. You're saying, you know, why don't you listen to me? Or why did you do it that way? Or don't you know I like it this way? Or you never listen. And you don't get down to, oh, yeah, this is an issue of respect. Or, you know, there's a phrase that a colleague of mine has. If it's hysterical, it's historical. Sometimes we're totally off the chart about something that's actually not even about our spouse. That, you know, it's just that it looks like something that was very painful. I knew someone whose husband would fall asleep at night. They'd get in bed and be hanging out, and he'd fall asleep talking, and she felt horribly abandoned. Meanwhile, you know, they're having, the guy's tired. But it activated some sense of hers that, you know, that nobody ever cared about her. And so that one is, you know, so people fight about their history. I sometimes say people are fighting the battle with their spouse that they lost as children.
Ooh, wait a minute. Say that one more time. I love that. Say it
people
one more time.
People are fighting with their, they're fighting a battle with their spouse that they lost as children.
So they were abandoned by their family. They were abused by their family. They
were
neglected, painful, whatever the issue may have been.
Yeah.
Maybe they were, you know, one other sibling was the favorite and you weren't.
You
and
got it.
Whatever. And on and on. And you're still playing that same
CD. You're going to fight to the death now to win
CD.
That battle. Exactly.
You got it. You got it. And you're still playing. Actually, that is such valuable information. You know, if your self-esteem was being ripped apart by your parents or one parent or the other back and forth, or something happened in your childhood, may not have been your parents, could have been a school teacher who was especially cruel or, you know, whatever
Correct.
The issue may be, you're dragging that sucker around with you because guess what? You never processed that.
And
now you're playing it all out again.
Exactly.
There you go.
But
yeah, it's interesting. You know,
do
you spend a lot of time with your couples on the issue of communication? Because communication is just the glue here. I mean, if you can't say, you know, if you can't kind of hop out of the weeds and go, you know, really what's really happening here is I think that you feel I don't respect you, right?
See,
to kind of say that.
I think, so what I write about and what I teach my couples is, first you have to slow down and you have to take a step back and you have to ask yourself, so what's really going on here? What's going on here? And I have this little exercise. I say, tell me everything that's true. And what that means is, what's true? I'd like to kick my husband. What's true is I feel like tearing my hair out. What's true is I'm sick and tired of having this conversation 400 times. And they go through this long list, and what's true is that I don't listen to him. And what's true is that when we get into this interaction, I actually give up. That they start to look at all the different things that are happening there, which is a way that guides people to start to look at the big picture.
Interesting. And really teaching people to kind of like take a breath too, because, you know, how can you communicate when you're led by emotion and a lot of the emotion is
right.
pretty explosive and volatile? I think it's hard for people to take a breath, don't you think?
Well, oh, sure. I mean, our brain gets really fired up. You know, a lot of what goes on at the basis of a lot of relationship difficulties is anxiety. And I'm not talking about anxiety like panic attack anxiety. A good definition of anxiety is just living in, under the condition where you have little or no control over many things, that there's just living in the context of the unknown, that it makes us, it's the disquieting feeling of not having control over everything, which is just part of human existence. But in relationships, you don't have control over your spouse. You don't have control over how they react to you. Half the time, we don't even have control over ourselves. And so this anxiety driving, people react. It's like your brain's on fire. Some part of us, you would swear that only yesterday we were like out on the savannah about to be eaten by lions. We act like that. That, you know, we're under incredible threat. You don't agree with me. Like, people light up. Your brain is not your ally.
I love it. Well, you know, it's interesting. As I was thinking about the premise of your book, right, that you could just be strong enough and have the strength and stamina to stand on your own and then now learn how to deeply connect with a partner who, you know, is problematic, maybe not really seeking the change that you feel is going to be important for a healthier relationship. So it seems like it's a lot of work for two people to together go to a therapist and get help. Seems like it's going to be a boatload of work for one person to initiate and then to really carry the burden until what? Until the other person
burden's not a good word. So let's think about it this way. Yeah, but that's how people think about it, which is I think it's...
to help us.
Okay. So, you know, it's like that's what people are afraid, that they're going to be just kind of carrying their partner's dead weight. What I'm talking about is I sometimes think about as being the ambassador for change in a relationship, for looking at what's possible, for not giving up, for being the one who has an idea and has the courage to step forward and go out on a limb and talk about it or try and change things. That people think, you know, that you're just gonna be the only one changing. But here's the surprising thing that I discovered. You know, if you think about marriage as a system, how systems work is that if you start to change one part of a system, it impacts the whole system. So as I was changing my own behaviors and the way I engaged, you know, our big issues were I'm too late, I move too slowly, and my husband's really messy. And there are a million variations of that that you could spend a lifetime dealing with those. But as I started to change my relationship to those issues, I stopped doing the exact same thing that I would always do, nagging. What was your word? BMW. That was really great. I have to remember that.
I made that up years ago.
Very nice. Very nice. And so when I stopped doing that, I was just focusing on what part of this problem am I creating? Little did I realize, I mean, I should have known since I understand systems, my husband was over there changing too. But it wasn't that I was engineering it and we weren't talking about it. But he was beginning to respond differently. And that's how systems work. And that's what this is based on. You're not doing all the work. You're just doing your part of the work to change the larger system as a whole. And there's no guarantee that your partner will change, but honestly, most people want to stay married. Most people want to have a good relationship. Maybe they don't have particularly good skills. Maybe they are fearful or reluctant to change. Many people are afraid to go to therapy, but nobody really wants to be unhappy. But some people, you know, don't put in much effort, and they think marriage is supposed to take care of itself all on its own. So somebody has to take the lead. Somebody has to say, I'm going to go first.
I love this. So what's your advice to people who want to follow in your footsteps and start changing their marriage on their own?
Yeah, I say pick one thing that you want to work on. We don't change 100 things. Pick one interaction. You might say, like, instead of X, I want to do Y. Instead of crying when I'm angry, I want to find my voice. Instead of going 0 to 60 and being a lunatic, I want to be able to calm down when we disagree. Like, use that formula. Instead of X, I want to do Y. And pick one thing that you want to work on, and don't think it's going to change instantly. The thing I picked was how overwhelmed I would get when my husband and I would have our circuitous fights, that I couldn't keep my thoughts together. So I experienced myself as this bright, together person in front of him when we were arguing. It would be like my IQ would be like plummeting, and I would just be dizzy because he's such an incredible arguer, and I would just be frozen. So I wanted to master that. So think of an experience that the one that makes you miserable, the one that makes you think, I can't believe I picked this person, I'm going to spend my life with this person. Work on how you process that, how you hold yourself, what you say, what you don't say, what you do that makes it worse. Experiment. I write in the book that all of this is a try this, try that process. Like fall 7 times, stand up 8. Don't think you're going to try it once and get the answer. You're going to have to, it's like muscle, it's like weightlifting. You start small, you keep lifting weights, you get stronger. And then you have the capacity to talk about things that you were afraid of. I say to people, use this phrase in your mind. I'm going to do it come what may. Like, what's the worst that's going to happen? I might get hurt, but I'm not going to die. So come what may, I'm going to bring this up. I'm going to say, I like to have sex in the shower. I'm going to say, I'm really tired of being the only person cleaning things up. I'm not going to wash dishes alone. I want to, whatever it is, you know, I think we're not saving enough. Or, you know, I think we're living too tight. Let's take a vacation. I mean, these things seem small, but there are bigger things that people want, and they're afraid. They're afraid to reveal themselves because it's going to rock the boat.
Well, you know, I also think that everything that you've brought up here, are stepping stones and laying down a very strong foundation for being able to make this work. At the end of your book, in your sort of pep talk for the journey chapter, you know, you share, yes, my solo approach was arduous and frustrating and quite lonely at times. And given the challenges, I was often convinced that I would fail. What I didn't know at the outset, in fact, the part I got wrong, was that taking matters into my own hands was anything but an act of giving up. Giving up is when you hold yourself back because your partner is holding himself back, because he's fearful or proud or resistant to change, or because she's run out of hope and is simply hunkering down. Giving up is where you put the brakes on your longing for a healthier, more vital relationship because conventional wisdom says one person shouldn't have to do more. Once I got past my own issues about fairness and stopped blaming Patrick for the state we were in, I recognized the payoff that comes from taking charge, signing on as the architect and carpenter in my own marriage remodel was empowering beyond anything I had imagined. I thought those were some of the most powerful words in the whole damn book.
Yeah, you know, thank you. As I was writing those words, it was raining and I was sitting in my car and I was facing my book deadline and I just had this inspired sense, and I sat there writing them with tears running down my face because that's really the heart of it. It's this sense of wanting to be empowered, wanting to have a bigger life, wanting to spread your wings. People live so small. And I realized that I was creating that for myself. I was living small, and I didn't have to. And when I reached out and when I got bigger, my husband did not resist that. He began to move into this bigger life together, which was really better than I had actually imagined at the outset.
Well, I absolutely love, again, the premise. Everyone out there in her podcast land, we've been talking to Winifred Riley, and her book is just fat. Please get it. just get it. Just take my word on this. It takes one to tango. How I rescued my marriage with almost no help from my spouse, and how you can too. And her website's, well, now for the book, it's 1-2-tango.com. The blog is speakingofmarriage.com. And the business is Winifred Reilly, and that's R-E-I-L-L-Y.com. Winifred, I want to thank you so much for being on the Her podcast. This has just been a terrific episode.
Oh, thank you. It's really been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. All right, everyone. Remember to catch every episode of Her. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or on our show page at RadioMD.com. Please run on over now to iTunes and leave us a rate and a review. We read these. I read these. I love to read them. So please, 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 I want to hear from you. Feedback rules. I'm Dr. Pam Peek. Follow me on Twitter at Pam Peek MD. And you can also check out our Her Show page at RadioMD.com for all of our past episodes. Thanks for listening, and stay well.